Hello, everyone, and welcome to Connectivity episode 255. I am your host, John Reardon, and I am joined, as always, by the slightly more intoxicated than usual, Neil Ronahan.
Well, I mean, it's not yet. I'll point out on the day that we are recording, it is January 6th, 2021, and if you live in America, it'll probably be a day little living in for me, in some respects.
Yes, some things have happened today.
Yeah, yeah. I'm drinking some bourbon, some Knob Creek bourbon that I got earlier in quarantine, and haven't worked that much on it. I drank some on election night, and I'm probably going to do some damage to it tonight, during the show, probably.
I am almost done with my first Heineken and have another one open and ready to go, waiting behind it. But joining us tonight on this most auspicious of evenings is our special guest for the evening, one Joe DeVader.
Hi. I don't have any alcohol because despite being given a bottle of Jack Daniels for graduating last year, I started meds literally right after that I can't drink on. So I have a Sprite.
That'll be aged. It's some aged JD that you'll have.
Exactly.
Send it to us.
Hey, I'm going to drink it eventually. So eventually I'm going to crack.
Well, tonight we are not going to talk about the siege of our Capitol building, but instead about things like Nintendo acquiring Next Level Games.
And the siege of Mandalore. No.
Sure, that too. That too. I did start in on the first High Republic book, which came out yesterday. So, yeah. You know, expect a Star Wars book report soon.
Yeah, yeah. I'm about, I think, 10 chapters into Star Wars, The Light of the Jedi.
You're 10? Jesus.
I had a boost because they released, like, a sampler where I went up, reading the first three chapters over the weekend and then had my pre-order. Okay. Like, also, some of those chapters are, like, 4 pages long. So, yeah. I think I'm, like, 70 pages in total, something like
okay.
that.
Okay. Yeah, I pre-ordered the audiobook, so I have no idea how far I am. I'm just listening to it on my way to and from work every day, so I'll get there half an hour.
Yeah, that'll definitely be something that we talk about at some point, because it is really fascinating. I haven't gotten, with how chaotic today has been, I haven't gotten the comic that came out today, but I look forward to reading that too. I think that's what I'm going with the Star Wars High Republic stuff. I'm going to read the main book that came out. I might, like, there's a part of me that's like, I don't want to read the young adult book, but if I get really into it, I might read the young adult book.
You've got a kid.
Yeah, yeah, no, I mean, there's one that I think came out this week that's, like, supposed to be, like, for, like, kids ages 5 to 8, and I just looked at my son, and I'm like, you disappoint me, you're not old enough yet.
Wow.
The gate's still closed.
But that one's got the Jedi Wookiee in it, so I might have to get it. And the Jedi Wookiee has popped up in the book so far, and I'm a big fan of the Jedi Wookiee.
So yeah, in a completely natural segue, Nintendo announced in the middle of the night, because Japan, that they had purchased Next Level Games. Which, of course, best known for the development of their masterpiece game, Metroid Prime Federation Force, but also lesser titles such as Luigi's Mansion 2 and 3. You guys have any initial hot takes on this, or is this just sort of business as usual?
So it makes a lot of sense. Like, this has been a company that at this point, I mean, they've been working with Nintendo for over 15 years. Their first game that they did with Nintendo was 2005. I think they started, like, you know, they were, like, you know, seeing Nintendo on the sly for a couple years. And I think it was Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon was when they were, like, you know, totally, we're not seeing anyone else, we're just seeing you, Nintendo. So they've been dating for a number of years. And now Nintendo got down on one knee because some of the, I guess, I don't know if this marriage metaphor can really go further. It might be that the people that run Next Level Games were looking for a dowry. And then Nintendo paid the dowry. But to translate that into a non-labored metaphor, it seems like this wasn't Nintendo actively trying to get Next Level Games and buy them. It was the quote from, like, the Nintendo press release was the owner directors at Next Level Games were looking to sell, and then Nintendo was like, well, we'll buy you. So that's how that happened.
I just want to take offense to the fact that you mentioned all those games that they made, but not the most important one being 2007's Spider-Man Friend or Foe, which, funnily enough, seems to be the first of the games on this list that I played. Because I didn't have a GameCube as a kid. But also Punch-Out. I forgot that they did Punch-Out. That's true. Game's really, really good.
So if we want to do this quick rundown, I have an article that I don't think anyone has edited yet because I think I put it up for edits like right before everything.
I mostly skimmed it to see what order the games were in.
So Next Level Games has put out 14 games since they formed. I will point out that the studio that became Next Level Games previously, I believe it was called Black Box. It wound up, I think, getting bought by EA. But their best game they made is Black Box, and that's Sega Soccer Slam, which is the greatest arcade sports game of all time, in my opinion. It's the best arcade soccer game ever made. Sega Soccer Slam is why the Mario Strikers games are good. That's just true facts right there. But they have made 14 games as Next Level Games, and I rank them by my own ranking. I'll just point out that they made two really forgettable rail shooters on Wii. Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon, which apparently I reviewed. I did not remember reviewing, but I reviewed it.
I really like that game.
Oh, I did not in really? 2010.
Let's revisit it. Connectivity, review, revisit. Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon.
That was a Transformers rail shooter game that Zach Miller did not enjoy. They had a WiiWare port of Jungle Speed, which is a pretty good card game. I never played the WiiWare port, though. They did NHL Hits Pro. They did Friend or Foe, which I think is actually, like, totally fine and fun.
I remember enjoying it as a child.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't a child when it came out. Like, I played it when I was in college. But, like,
I suppose. Probably middle school.
It was basically, like, a Lego-style Spider-Man game. Like, with that kind of, like, it was a 3D beat-em-up, like, cute cartoony graphics.
And you could play as Dr. Octopus.
Yeah. And then they made Ticket to Ride, an Xbox Live Arcade. And then the Captain America Super Soldier game, which I think John and I talked about on a recent episode, which they basically just like ripped off the Batman Arkham Asylum game, but it was with Captain America. And it's not as good as Arkham Asylum, but it's way better than
it's better than it should be.
And I think it might technically be MCU canon, so.
I want the PS3 and 360 version to not be canon, but the Wii version is. That's the true ending.
And then they did Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon and Luigi's Mansion 3. They did Punch-Out. They did Mario Strikers Charge. They did Super Mario Strikers. And they also made Metroid Prime Federation Force, which is at the top of my ranked list. Because it's a fantastic video game that really, honestly, gets too much crap.
I never played Federation Force. So I've played four of these games, I guess, technically five. I played Strikers Charge for like 10 minutes once when I rented it from a Blockbuster. Remember those? I have played Punch-Out. It's super, super good. I did not like Dark Moon. I made it to the end of Dark Moon and just gave up. Because I did not like it. And I did like Luigi's Mansion 3. So, I mean, that's most of the games I enjoyed.
I think I'm kind of the reverse. But it's not that I don't like Luigi's Mansion 3. I just think it's way too long.
I could agree with that.
I think it's a very good game, but I think like it makes me think more about how I think that the first Luigi's Mansion is a perfect length for what they do in that game.
And I also wish that they would make a Luigi's Mansion that was more like Dark Moon and 3 both do things way differently. And it feels like the parts they want to reuse from the original GameCube game, just they're not the parts I liked. And the parts they don't want to reuse are the parts I liked, if that makes sense. It's weird.
Yeah, I kind of get that. I do. With Dark Moon, I stand by that for a portable video game, the structure of the game is great. Like, the mission-based structure works really good for that. But with three, like, I don't, it's not the structure that bothers me as much. It's just, like, it's very creative, but then still your interactions with things are largely just like, oh, you're going to go do this combat with this ghost again, I guess.
I think Dark Moon is the best game in the series.
Oh, you're nuts. I hate Dark Moon.
I know.
I think I'd agree with that.
I bought Dark Moon at launch. I still own it, obviously. And then I played up to a certain point when I got frustrated and stopped for like 2 years. And then I went back and I made it to that section at the end where it's just this gauntlet of ghosts. And I don't remember exactly what it is, but I think it's timed or something like that. And
I have a memory of that.
After like four tries, I closed my 3DS and I have not loaded that game back up since. And I have absolutely no desire to do so.
Tragic.
I mean, that's kind of what happened with me with Luigi's Mansion 3, but I don't even remember the exact moment. I actually started replaying it because my son booted up the game, which is, I mean, it's because it's got a Mario character in it, but he really enjoyed watching me play it. I was surprised that he wasn't scared. Like, I started it over from the beginning with him when King Boo shows up, and King Boo looks, like, terrifying, and he's just there pointing at the screen like, Boo! 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 And I'm like, aren't you scared? And he, like, laughed when Boo chased Luigi.
You have created the strongest human being. That's just, that's the only conclusion.
Neil is hiding in the corner crying because he's so afraid of Boo.
Look at his red eyes and the jewel on his head.
When I hear about kids who, like, can't make it through The Nightmare Before Christmas because Oogie Boogie is scary. Like, he's genuinely scary, and as a kid, it didn't faze me whatsoever.
Oogie Boogie never bothered me. It was one scene in Nightmare Before Christmas where the kid opens a present, and it's just a severed head.
I remember that. I had that a similar... That's what bothered me about that movie, man. Too.
That part gave me Oogie Boogie, whatever, it's a pillow, but like, but that part,
are your pillows made
really
of burlap? Are you sleeping on burlap?
Listen,
you know, Iowa,
listen, different cultures are different. Don't judge my life,
but yeah, I enjoyed Luigi's Mansion 3 enough, but I don't think either of them are as good as the original Luigi's Mansion.
I still really like Dark Moon. But there's something kind of perfect about the flow of that original game.
It's just so weird for, like, it's so weird and experimental for, like, a Mario game that I actually kind of, when I think about it, like, I can't believe that game is real. And also that it's very good, but, I mean, they've just never made something like that again.
I can't shake feeling like the original Luigi's Mansion was a tech demo.
I mean...
And Dark Moon was the first time they actually made a game out of that tech demo.
I mean, I don't think you're wrong about Luigi's Mansion 1.
So I did an episode on Luigi's Mansion for one of my other podcasts, and I'm pretty sure it was straight up a tech demo before they decided to turn it into a game.
The moment you walk in, it's like, look at the light and the shadows, and ooh, there's a cloth over this mirror. Pull the cloth off. Ooh, you can see your reflection. Like, everything in that room is like, look at the GameCube go. It's very tech demo.
It was originally, it was being worked on as an N64 game, I believe.
That would have been my
previous
impressive
research. But yeah, I mean, it was definitely used to highlight things on the GameCube. It's part of the reason why it was pushed from N64 to GameCube, was maybe because they realized that they could show off more of the game there.
Well, it's the same reason why Melee has an FMV at the start. That was specifically to show, like, hey, we can do FMV now, and please ignore the fact that PlayStation could already do that.
Yeah, I was going to say, welcome to
and
PS1.
They did it way better. And
welcome to Sega Saturn. Welcome to the next level. Hey.
So with next level games being bought by Nintendo, let's not do the easy thing of being like, make Luigi's Mansion 4, Metroid Prime Federation Forcer. Something that they haven't worked on. What would be a Nintendo franchise that you would want Next Level Games to work on next?
Ooh, boy, this was sitting in the notes, and I still didn't put any thought into it beforehand.
I'm also genuinely having difficulty thinking of, because, like, when I think of what do I want Next Level Games to make now, make another Punch-Out, please. Punch-Out's really good. I really, really like the Wii Punch-Out, and that game... did not do great, as far as I am aware.
I don't think it sold really poorly. I just don't think it sold amazingly well.
Well, it also had a really bizarre law legal problem with it.
It did.
I guess
the Sailor Moon one.
Yeah, there's somewhere in like the background, in a place where normal players would not find it. There's like a picture of a Sailor Moon chapter or something.
So one of the characters, is it the Japanese boxer? I can't think of his name. But he reads manga during one of his like idle animations between matches. And if you take the cam, like if you, you know, emulate the game and take the camera around his manga, the inside panel is Sailor Moon.
And like a regular player would never see that, but
no.
We have people who make entire YouTube careers over out of like moving cameras where they're not supposed to go.
Yep.
And so that came to the attention of Naoko Takeuchi and the people that represent her. She's the author of Sailor Moon. And they weren't super happy about that. And so they brought it to court. And I believe that is generally considered to be the reason why we do not have another Punch-Out game.
It is weird. When did that happen? Because that got re-released on Wii U.
I don't know when exactly it happened.
Was it the Boundary Break video that brought it up to the public eye?
It might have been.
Because that video isn't old. That video is like at most 2 years old.
Yeah, it might have been. The only thing I know is that it got Nintendo in like some actual legal hot water.
Which is probably why Nintendo hasn't been super nice to Boundary Break since.
Hey. That's why they bought Next Level Games. It's so we can keep an eye on you. So you don't get us into more trouble.
So you stop putting Yu Yu Hakusho in Luigi's Mansion 4.
Yeah, so it's September 2019 is when this happened.
Yeah, so that's super recent. I'm trying to think of what I would want them to work on. I want them to work on something that requires like really nice animation, because I feel like that's where they really shine. Like just in characterizing everyone with great animation, like Luigi's Mansion especially, but even stuff like Metroid Prime Federation Force, like the way all this cutscenes and everything were orchestrated was just so well done.
So maybe from a storytelling perspective, like what would we want them to work on? Because I think they do a good job on, I mean, they're not as talented as the Pixars of the world, but it's in that style.
Yeah. I mean, I'll take a Star Fox game, but really, how about like Detective Pikachu or something?
That
got announced
something
like
that
2 years
really
ago.
Heavily on it. What's
right?
That?
Yeah, it was like 2 years ago that got announced for Switch.
Yeah,
all right, it did, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before the movie, I think, or around it was around when the movie came out. I don't know if it was before or after.
Yeah, I want them to do something very story heavy, that can really leverage just pretty art. And I don't know what exactly that, if that was Star Fox, I'd be fine with it. But I feel like, I don't know, something like Detective Pikachu might be better.
If Sakurai's not going to make another Kid Icarus, maybe Next Level could take on a Kid Icarus game.
But also, Sakurai should make another Kid Icarus.
But also, Sakurai should make another Kid Icarus game.
Because hot dang, that game is
Man, at this point, I would
Smash
take
Bros.
Uprising
game,
on Switch. Oh my god.
Please, Kid Icarus Uprising is one of the best Star Fox games ever made.
But like, I think that's my answer. I would love to see a Kid Icarus game made for Switch by Next Level. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah,
I think I have one that I think is, I don't think it's an easy answer, but it's one that like, it's not like it's a dormant franchise, is seeing them do a Kirby game, but like a Kirby game that has a weird amount of story. Goes real deep into that Kirby lore. I like that. That could be fun. Maybe there's some kind of new gameplay hook. Maybe it's a 3D Kirby game or something. But the one that's a little more out there is give them the Ice Climbers. Let them make the open world Ice Climber game.
I don't want to summon the. Like, I hate the game so much. I hate the original game so much. I never want to see them have another starring role ever.
What bugs me is that I agree with you that the original Ice Climber is a shitty game, but I love the idea behind it because it was like, okay, we made Super Mario Brothers where you're scrolling from left to right. What makes sense other than doing a platformer where you're going down to up when you're going vertically? And I think there's cool ideas there. It's just that, unfortunately, the jumping in Ice Climber is just absolute shit.
It came out before, it was made before Super Mario Brothers showed how physics in a platformer should work. So they don't.
I think vertical platformers like Kid Icarus did that much better.
Yeah, but Kid Icarus also still sucks.
Yeah.
It still sucks, but it's way better than Ice Climber.
Kid Icarus gets a lot better when it's not a vertical platformer.
I'd replay Kid Icarus over playing Ice Climber a million times.
Both soundtracks are pretty banging.
The soundtrack to Kid Icarus is good in theory, but playing it on the NES, it's so high-pitched. It's higher pitched than any other NES soundtrack ever made, and it gives me a headache immediately.
Well, also, when you're in the labyrinth, the song in the labyrinth is like a 20-second loop.
It's very, yeah.
And those are the longest levels.
Yeah. Yep.
I think that their animation style might work really well with Mother, but also I've been fairly outspoken on the fact that if another Mother was made and Itoi was not involved, I have zero interest in it whatsoever.
I mean, he's also said that it's done with Mother 3.
Yeah, he doesn't want to make another one, and if he's not interested in making another one, I don't want another one.
Also, like, the story got told. Like, it came up somewhere recently where I was thinking about Mother 3, and like, oh man, like, I forgot how good the story in Mother 3 is, and it's the real bummer about it likely never coming out in English is that so many people will never play that game, because I think it might be, like, one of the coolest, weirdest stories ever in a Nintendo game.
There we go. Let them remake Mother 3.
Yeah, make it like a Earthbound 64.
Like, that's the only way that that game is ever going to come out in the West, is if it gets, like, a full ground-up remake.
Yeah, like, let Next Level Games work with Itoi. Like, that can happen, right?
That'd be fun. I think they'd be really good at that, actually.
Yeah, maybe that's what will chatter Will into existence. It'll be called Earthbound 64.
Yes, has to be, 100%. And also, I need it to be the low-poly art style of Earthbound 64. And
so
the
why is Next Level doing it? I have no idea, but I would like to see that video game.
Just have like a skin you could put on Lucas that's the Mother 64 prototype model.
So outside of games for Next Level to work on, I personally don't think that Nintendo's going to go on a buying spree here. I think the Next Level game situation was just kind of like unique in that the owners wanted to sell, so the Nintendo didn't want to lose them as a partner. They're a very valuable partner. But if Nintendo were to buy other studios, like, who do you think would be next, or who do you want to see them buy that, you know, within the realm of possibility?
Well, I agree with you that I don't think they will. I think Microsoft, I think, is doing that because they need third-party developers. And I don't think Nintendo at least feels like they're in that spot.
And they've always kind of been stingy with buying stuff.
Yeah. I mean, really, if you think about who they've, I guess Monolith and Brownie Brown, that's now 1UP Studio, I think were both bought.
They own Retro, right?
Yeah, they own Retro.
Yes.
But a lot of things, it's like they own stakes in companies, but they don't own all of them. Like, I think they own a stake in Intelligent Systems, which is weird because of how, like, close Intelligent Systems is to them, that they don't own them fully.
I mean, they don't fully own the Pokemon company either.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I would say, I mean, I could see somewhere, like, Way Forward or something like that. Or just going and buying the Pokemon company and Intelligent Systems.
Yeah. Yacht Club. I mean, I don't think Yacht Club would ever happen. I honestly don't think Yacht Club would ever want to do it, because I think Yacht Club's probably making more than enough money on their own.
I think the only one that I could see as a realistic possibility that I don't think will happen, mind you, is maybe Platinum. They've been working real buddy-buddy with Platinum for the past couple years.
Yeah,
I think the problem with that is Joe, we got to meet him at the last gaming event ever in PAX East 2021, or 2020. PAX East 2021 probably isn't going to happen. But I think, like, Kamiya and Inaba and, like, the brain trust of Platinum, I think their games are really good and people like working them, but I think they're real pains in the asses.
I know Kamiya for a fact is well known to be a pain in the ass to work
with. There's a reason why they left Capcom. It's because Capcom sucks. It's a little bit because those dudes, I think, are a little difficult to work with despite being totally brilliant.
But, Platinum overall, though, seems to work well with Nintendo. You have Astral Chain last year. They did Wonderful 101 and then gave them the rights back so the game could have a fair shake. And Bayonetta 2, and they helped with Star Fox Zero. And they've had a better relationship with Nintendo than they have had with just about anybody else. But I still also don't think that would happen.
Yeah, I think if Platinum were to get bought by anybody, it would be Nintendo.
I could see there being some bids for them from other companies.
I feel like they wouldn't even listen to one from Microsoft anymore after the whole... what was the game called?
Scalebound.
Scalebound, yeah. After the whole Scalebound debacle.
It's still coming. You just got to have faith.
Yeah, it's coming to Nintendo Switch as a exclusive, as they've been saying for... 3 years now.
Which was that just Astral Chain? Did everybody just heard that there was a Platinum game coming and it was an action game, and they're like, I guess Scalebound's coming back?
No, because there were so many quote-unquote leakers that were specifically saying Nintendo's in talks with Platinum to revive Scalebound as a Switch exclusive, and that I feel like a new quote-unquote source said that every single year for 3 years. And surprise, there's no Scalebound on Switch.
You didn't believe enough.
Or Astral Chain is Scalebound. And they just replaced the dragons with the weird slavery.
It was just
creatures.
More like, let's make them cops. That'll fly.
Yeah.
I mean, in that case, Astral
People
Chain's a
cops,
good
right?
a good game.
It sure is.
To be fair, I guess I should say this as a spoiler for Astral Chain. if we care.
It's been... If you haven't played Astral Chain, I feel like you might not. If not, then just skip ahead a minute.
The head of the police is the bad guy in Astral Chain.
Nah, that makes sense. that just makes a lot of sense.
At the end of the game, it's revealed that the main villain of the game was actually the head of the cops. So
that makes a lot of sense. Slavery still a thing?
Oh yeah. Slavery, and you can also fuse with your slave to become a super slave cop, which is actually super rad.
The whole game is super rad.
That game is great.
It just feels like Eva, but with cops in battle shorts.
And it I believe it was also Platinum's most successful launch ever, because Platinum, while they are known for doing pretty good action games, none of their games have done super great in terms of sales numbers. They're a very niche company, and I think they're fine with being a niche company, but
I remember always talking Atlus with a lot of before Persona kind of, and then they got bought by Sega and everything, but Atlus in the DS era, it always seemed like they were very good at we're gonna put this amount of money into this DS game, localize it, put out just enough, and not lose our shorts over trying to put out this game. And I think it's all with knowing what expectations are reasonable to set with a game and making sure that the budget doesn't go completely insane, so that way you don't need to do that. What was it, the Tomb Raider game ages ago, where Square Enix just straight-faced was we need to sell 6 million copies to break even. And you're what? Say what now? That's... not that many games sell 6 million copies in a year.
The whole thing with Tomb Raider and all that is... That's a can of worms. That's such a stupid story.
So I'd say I agree with the Platinum pick. I think if I had to pick one for... I feel like there's one that I think might make sense, kind of depending on the situation, and one that I think is less likely, but might be beneficial for all parties involved. I think one that makes sense is, I feel like Grezzo could be a company that Nintendo could buy. Yeah. They've been working, doing a great job on, the Zelda ports and remakes and stuff. They seem to be a good partner for Nintendo and have for over a decade. But that might be one like Next Level Games, or maybe if the ownership wants to sell, then Nintendo would be like, well, we want to keep working with you. It's been working out.
I wonder how much of that comes from like Nintendo not buying Rare back in the day. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know if like that left a lasting impression of, because the sort of narrative around that over the years, just with fans alone, has been like, yeah, Nintendo really should have bought Rare when they had the chance.
But no, they shouldn't like, have.
I don't know if I can say, like, either way that they should or shouldn't have. Because, I'll be real, I've kind of turned around on Rare recently after having played Banjo-Tooie on my other show and realizing that Banjo-Tooie is not all that good.
No,
it's not.
Banjo-Kazooie is like the only game I think they ever made that like holds up. Well, back in the Nintendo era, that holds
Diddy
up now.
Diddy Kong
Racing. Okay, yeah, Diddy Kong Racing. No, that
Diddy Kong Racing. Yeah, Diddy Kong Racing is really good. I think we, well, Perfect Dark, I think is fantastic. But
I can't stand it's also, Perfect Dark.
Get out of here. but even still, like with Rare, it was a similar situation to Next Level, where I believe that the Stamper brothers, who were, you know, like the owners, founders, whatever, of Rare, they wanted out, which is why the sale was even happening. And you did have that kind of talent bleed where like the people who made GoldenEye and Perfect Dark, like some of that core team went to make Free Radical, which then went on to make Time Splitters, which I'll stand by for Time Splitters 2. That game is sick.
So I actually did research on this early last year because I wrote a video that just didn't
edited. For it. Come on, Matt.
But basically the way it was is Nintendo was still giving them money, but they weren't giving them enough. Like they hadn't raised the amount of money they were giving them to account for how much more expensive games were getting to be. And so they were like, funny. Hey, we don't have enough money to make any games. And so they kind of just started hinting like, you know, maybe if you just bought us and funded us that way, that'd be, it'd be cool. And then it wasn't Nintendo that knocked on the door. It was, I believe, it was either Activision or Microsoft were the two that knocked on the door. And Microsoft is obviously the one that won out. Yeah. And Nintendo.
I think Activision had a pretty substantial offer. I forget the exact story of, you know, why Microsoft wound up buying them, but I remember like I think there was like reporting even that it's like, oh, Rare is going to get bought by Activision, which really would have like kind of changed the face of gaming in a way. Maybe not like in a major way, but I think Microsoft wouldn't have had that internal studio that then was a part of, for example, the Xbox 360 launch with Cameo, with Perfect Dark Zero. They wouldn't have had, you know, Rare to make a lot of stuff for Kinect, which, as much as we can kind of make fun of Kinect now, like, it did super well. It was very successful.
It was huge for a Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah, and then it came out on Xbox One, and people were like, I don't know her. Like, who's this? But I think that modern Rare has found their place. Sea of Thieves, I think, is legitimately one of the best games made in the past couple years. It's just really, like... It's weird and interesting. It's not, I've gotten in the habit of playing it with, actually, it feels relevant to call that out because for people that have been listening to Connectivity back before it was even called Connectivity on Newscast, I played a lot of Sea of Thieves with my former co-hosts on Newscast, Zach Miller, Nathan Mustafa, and Andy Gergen. And it eventually got to a point where we just learned the basics of the game. And it would just be like, we'd like complete a couple missions and just kind of shoot the shit for like an hour. Like, I think Nathan referred to it as, like, it's a screensaver that I, like, look at and interact with while I talk to friends.
Still got to play Sea of Thieves, because
I got my Series X
downloaded. It's on Game Pass, so we just have both of them downloaded, and we got to play
sometime. Fantastic. And it is the kind of thing, like, I don't even think I'm really that good at it, but it doesn't matter, just because it is, like, you kind of do your own thing. You might run into a ghost ship or other people. And there's other people that are better at the game than you. I never went out of my way to look up like combat strats, but oh boy, they exist. Like, there's mm-hmm. so many, like, weird things. You can get bombs that you can throw at people and it'll make them dance uncontrollably. Like,
I had a very weird experience of playing solo and having another ship come up behind me, and the guy just jumped onto my ship and then used my cannon to sink his own ship, saluted me, and jumped into the ocean. And it was the weirdest thing ever, but it really, I feel like that encapsulated that game's experience for me. I didn't play it much after that, because I was like, well, that's peak. That's
how could that's it ever be better than
also,
that?
Also,
how could any video game be better than that?
Kanan Jarrus, also, Freddie Prinze Jr. himself, big Sea of Thieves fan. Yes.
Ooh, does he want to play with us?
I don't know. I mean, I did have my Twitter interaction with him like 2 years ago. Since then, I have followed him on Twitter. Like, he's got his own YouTube gaming channel and stuff. He's really into Super Mega Baseball as well, which means we're best friends automatically. But like, seriously,
Freddie
like
Prinze
I went
Jr.'s
down
kind of awesome.
I went down the rabbit hole of like, what's Freddie Prinze Jr. up to? And it's like, oh, like he's just doing, like, he wrote for the WWE for a couple of years. Like, it's just doing tabletop RPGs, playing Sea of Thieves and stuff. And then, like, Matthew Lillard, his other compatriot from 90s teen comedies.
From Wing Commander.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Matthew Lillard, like, owns, like, a tabletop company and, like, apparently was at PAX Unplugged when I was there last year, or, like, 2 years ago. But I guess what I'm saying is that our next PAX panel, when we can go back to them, hopefully Matthew Lillard will be there with his company. And then we can hang out and be friends. And I could be like, dude, SLC Punk is the truth.
We should see if Matthew Lillard and Freddie Prinze Jr. want to come on Connectivity.
I mean, it's worth a flyer. Like, we'll have to remember when we remember
to do this.
I'd
be able to
put
that on my resume. I've been on a podcast that Freddie Prinze Jr. was on later.
But it's a trap. All I want to do is talk to him about Wing Commander.
It'll just be you'll be talking to FPJ about Wing Commander, and I'll be talking to Matthew Lillard about like what was it like making SLC Punk.
And well, it'll be an unlistenable podcast because four people will be having two disparate conversations at the same time.
It'll be the one episode of Connectivity where we don't talk about Star Wars, despite having a dude who literally plays a Jedi on the podcast. That would be great. That would be amazing. Let's do it. Let's get Dave Filoni on here, too, and then not talk about Star Wars.
We'll just talk about... What did he work on before Star Wars?
King of the Hill and Avatar?
Yeah. We could just talk about
That dude's...
That is two very different shows. Holy hell.
But like, also, they're both great.
Oh, yeah. They're both fantastic. But, like...
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And that's why he wears a cowboy hat now. Because of Avatar. So, by the time this podcast goes out, theoretically, the embargo will be up on a Monster Hunter Rise demo that Capcom sent us yesterday. And I don't know if neither of you have had time to play this, right?
No, I have not.
I've never played a Monster Hunter game in my life.
Okay. Well, then I guess be the most qualified person to talk about this. Monster Hunter is a weird series for me because I've technically been playing this series since the first one on PS2, but I have never gotten any better nor learned anything more about the game. So I'm simultaneously an expert and someone who's very bad at it. But Monster Hunter Rise demo has had two missions. And like an intermediate and an easy mission just to kind of get you into it. Overall impressions is that it is, if you liked Monster Hunter World and the updates that made to the Monster Hunter formula, this is more of that with some extra little bonus mechanics. It visually holds up remarkably well to Monster Hunter World. It looks really nice. It, like, I know the second mission in there, you're fighting this, like, water dragon thing. It may have a name, but I don't know Monster Hunter names.
They always have names.
They always have names.
They all have names. I know
did,
that much.
There was a point at which a Rathalos showed up, and I was like, oh, it's a Rathalos. Might have been a Raytheon. I don't know. But it was one of the dragon things.
There's just one that I recognize. It's the thing that shows up in Smash Brothers.
That's Rathalos.
I think that's the Rathalos. Yeah. Yeah, it's the dragon from the first Monster Hunter, and that's the reason I know it, is I remember playing on PS2 and running away from it, and then trying to frantically type to the other players, because there wasn't voice chat. You had to type to people on a USB keyboard that you bought separately for your PS2. It was a different time. But yeah, but so you fight like this
really?
Water
we
dragon.
We can't even do really voice chat on Switch.
That's fair. You know...
Yes, you can. Tangent. With the Nintendo Switch Online app,
so,
on a
Discord.
Different device or Discord.
I have a Monster Hunter tangent about voice chat. Monster Hunter Tri on Wii U.
No,
had
are we,
excellent.
Oh yeah,
voice
yeah.
Chat.
Okay. Or no? Was it? It was 3 Ultimate, wasn't it? Like, didn't have some dumb name. Or?
That's the same game.
Okay.
But yes, whatever the hell. The third Monster Hunter game, which is actually like the 15th, but whatever. Monster Hunter Tri 3 Ultimate, whatever, had voice chat, but it could just use... You could use a headset, but you could also just use the mic built into the Wii U gamepad.
That was great.
Which means that everyone you were playing with could talk. No matter... like, and that's a game where communication is very important. Because, like, if you generally, when you go out on a mission to hunt something, you split up, and then somebody finds it, and you want them to be able to scream at you that they found it. So it's a very good game to have good voice chat in. And I fully suspect that Monster Hunter Rise will not have that. At best, we'll get emojis of our characters with pom-poms or something, like Triforce Heroes. But we'll see.
That worked way better than it should have. I'm not going to defend it too much.
It's something.
But, like, Triforce Heroes, like, that kind of worked, even if it was still ridiculous and, like, just put in voice chat.
So Monster Hunter Rise. It looks very nice. So the second boss you fight is a water dragon. You encounter it at night, and it's kind of sleeping on this pond, and it's all bioluminescent, and there's screen space reflections, so you can see it reflecting in the water, and everything just looks beautiful. And it's honestly a very impressive-looking Switch game. I haven't tried it portably yet. I've only played it docked, so I can't say how well it holds up there. But initial impressions docked are very good. The main thing that this one seems to change up from World is the weird bug-based grappling system, where you can kind of like use it to essentially run up walls or to zip across the world. I always forget it's there because it feels so out of place in Monster Hunter to like actually be able to traverse outside of like very specifically laid out areas. But yeah, I occasionally would use it on accident and then figure out that I could like run up the wall and like go over a wall between two areas. And that was neat. I think you could probably make very good use of it while fighting monsters to like jump up above them and then come smashing down on top of them.
That's what I remember from Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate. I forget the name of the weapon, but it was the one where you just kind of like vault into the air.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so similar stuff to that. You can also ride on the monsters, which comes up when two monsters are fighting each other. You can kind of weaken them and then hop on one and use it to attack the other one, which is a thing, I suppose. But yeah, no, initial impressions, good. It's more Monster Hunter World, and as someone who feels like we probably should have got to the point Monster Hunter World was at a couple generations ago, I am happy to have that much more updated Monster Hunter formula on the go. So this is something I am looking forward to.
Like, that's the thing is I've heard that Monster Hunter World is just an incredible game, like really revitalizes the franchise and everything.
It fixes everything.
The quote that I have heard describing new players to Monster Hunter World is, "You don't know how good you have it."
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, does it seem
so
like Rise might have that approachability of Monster Hunter World?
Yes. It is. So best example for the world formula versus the original Monster Hunter formula, which that's the thing, is Monster Hunter is worse than Pokemon in that the formula they set up on PS2, they have not touched from PS2 up until World. It was the same formula. They added some weapons, little things like that, but like the basic controls and mechanics of the game, even down to every area loading in tiny segments because, you know, of course we can't load the entire map at once. All of that was from that PS2 game. Worlds gives you a unified map. You can, rather than picking up, you know, herbs and honey and combining those together to make potions and mega potions, you just set it up so when you pick up an herb, if you have enough herbs, you'll just automatically get a potion.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
If you get a bunch of honey, it'll just automatically convert those potions to mega potions, because there's no other use for having that stuff. And it's just immediate, just, this is so much better. And then trying to go back to those old games, like after I played World and I'm like, I want to play this on Switch. And so I went and got, you know, Monster Hunter Generations, I think is the one that's on Switch. Yeah. And it's just, oh, I can't go back to this. So Rise has all those modernizations in it, and it makes such a huge difference.
That makes me really excited, because that's like, my Monster Hunter experience is that my first one that I ever played was Tri on Wii. But I think that, mm-hmm. I think when that came out, it was like, I got it right before finals in college and like got really into it for a week and then put it down because I had like work to do. And then never went back to it. But then I got really deep into Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate on 3DS and like played the crap out of that. And then just, I think I got Generations on 3DS, but I just didn't put that much time into it. And yeah. It's just like that time sink. And it is like, once you do the time sink in one game, you know, like you said, you kind of account for all the fiddly bullshit. And then mm-hmm. I would like start Generations and just be like, no, like I'm not doing, I already went through this. I went through so much of this game. Yeah. So I look forward to having a portable version of Monster Hunter that has some streamlined design into it. And I actually I kind of wasn't that excited for Rise as much until hearing about how it has more of the niceties of World. And thinking about playing that on the go as opposed to having it, you know, I guess technically I think I could play Monster Hunter World via, you know, cloud play or whatever the hell on Microsoft my phone. But that's no, I'm not doing that.
it's worth pointing out that because I don't think this will be immediately obvious to everyone. But Monster Hunter Rise is very much a sequel to Monster Hunter World, as opposed to a version of Monster Hunter that has some of the updates from World in it. This is the follow-up to Monster Hunter World, not some alternate reality thing. So if you liked World, this is essentially its sequel.
Initial impressions
are good.
I should play this demo.
The thing that, you should, as somebody that doesn't really play Monster Hunter, and truthfully I don't have a huge amount of interest in Monster Hunter, online multiplayer stuff is really tiring for me, and I can only play it with friends and all that. The thing that most excites me about Rise is the fact that it is made on RE Engine, and it is the first game to be on Switch that is running on a Switch mm-hmm. made in RE Engine, because I kind of just assumed after this point, because until now, Capcom has made 5 games with RE Engine, Resident Evil 7, Resident Evil 2, 3, Devil May Cry 5, and Monster Hunter World are all RE Engine. And I kind of just, since none of those games came to Switch, I kind of just assumed that RE Engine didn't play well with the hardware.
Right.
But apparently, it works.
They figured it out.
Right, and it's not like, you know, Ubisoft's Anvil engine, where you look at Immortals Fenyx Rising and go like, ooh, yeah, that
I can see why they didn't bother doing other games with this.
Yeah, like, okay, I get this. Whereas with this, you look at it and go, wait, so why isn't World on Switch? Like, why isn't Resident Evil on Switch? Like this seems to run really well, and it's buttery smooth and like sharp and has a lot of the visual like I mentioned, like screen space reflections and stuff like that that you don't usually see in Switch games. And I don't understand if this engine works so well. And maybe this is just crazy optimized for Switch, but it really gives off the impression that this engine works great on Switch.
Well, I don't think that Devil May Cry 5 would work on Switch. I think the environments are too big. But I mean, hey, that one leak said that Special Edition, the one with ray tracing, is coming to Switch Pro, guys. So.
Is that the same leak as Super Mario Iliad?
No, that's a different leak. This one said it was Odyssey 2.
I want Super Mario Iliad.
Super Mario Iliad is the best fake name for a game I think I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And I'm now going to be disappointed with whatever the next 3D Mario
can,
is.
We should
because
point
it
out,
won't be Super Mario
what
Iliad.
What would the Super Mario Trojan War be?
Achilles would be... Who would represent Achilles?
I need to like look at a list to map this out more. Achilles... Like, I don't think Achilles being Donkey Kong?
Yeah. Donkey Kong. There we go. And
he's
then
the best
Patroclus.
Of the best.
Patroclus is Diddy, I guess. That would make him no, that would be weird actually. Diddy's his nephew. Lanky. It'd be Lanky Kong.
You're not making a Mario game, you're making a Donkey Kong.
No,
country
see,
game.
Donkey Kong and Lanky are side characters. They're over there and you get to watch one of them get shot with an arrow through the ankle and the other get run over by a chariot. It's your
donkey tendon.
I'm designing the game of the year, John.
As long as it's called Super Mario Iliad, I'll be happy.
So I'm gonna.
That's all I need.
I will jet in here slightly to talk briefly about Ring Fit Adventure before then going to soothe my crying child who woke up from being asleep and I guess needs his father to share King Boo stories of Luigi's Mansion with him.
So soothing.
So, Ring Fit Adventure, Joe and I are trying to get back into it. Or I guess for me, it's back into it. I think you just recently got it, right?
I bought it near the end of November and then played it once. And then the holidays happened.
Yeah. And you were like, oh, I'm going to do this every day. And then you didn't.
Yeah. And now I want to try and get into it like Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Didn't do it today because...
Yeah, some things happened.
But I'm hopefully going to do it tomorrow. And I mean, I'm not looking to do like, I don't want to get buff and powerful. I'm not looking to turn into Donkey Kong or anything, but like, I would like to not feel like my lungs are on fire every time I walk up a set of stairs.
So like, that's what, so I've had two, specifically two bouts of like, I'm going to do Ring Fit for, you know, a couple times a week. And then I do it for 1 week and then I never do it again.
Yeah. That's what I'm worried about.
So I did it on Monday and now we can kind of be each other's, Ring Fit buddies. I did have plans to do it today, but yeah, then some things happened. I'm going to hopefully do it tomorrow. I'm aiming to do it like maybe like 3 to 4 times a week. That's kind of my goal, giving myself some grace with, you know, maybe it's only 3 times the first week. But I do have to say, like, I'm just so impressed with how that game works. One, it's really easy to get back into when you fall off it, which is an important thing for an exercise game in my eyes. And it's also, like, the gamification of it works really, really well. Because it is that, like, mm-hmm. oh, like, I'm just going to run to go get to this next part, or like, oh, there's a guy chasing me, so I have to like do the high stepping, or even some of the boss battles where like you realize like, okay, I hate doing the plank, but if I do the plank then on this enemy, then I know like I won't have to do the full set of planks because I'll kill it before it's done. And just stuff like that where like it tricks my dumb gamer brain into being like, exercise is a game. It's fun.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping that's how it goes for me. Also, something I don't see a lot of people talk about, that soundtrack's real good.
Yeah, and like, it looks nice
that
too.
That battle theme is a jam.
Yeah, I forget who the composer is, but I know it's made by like the Labo 1-2 Switch team, and I think it even like uses the Breath of the Wild engine, which kind of makes sense when you look at that game.
Yeah, it looks very Breath of the Wild-y in terms of...
One day, I want to know the genetic history of that engine and where it's been and where it went.
So I'm looking at the list.
I suspect it's fascinating.
There are 4 composers credited on Ring Fit Adventure, but I only recognize one of the names as somebody that I'm super familiar with, which is Shiho Fuji. Who has done like Splatoon, and she works on a lot of like new Super Mario Brothers games, and she's very cool. She does some real damn good work. So
yeah, it seems like people who have been at Nintendo for a while. There's someone that worked on Rhythm Heaven that's on it. You should do that for OSC.
I've done Rhythm Heaven Fever. Oh, you mean Ring Fit Adventure.
Ring Fit Adventure.
At some point, I probably will, honestly. It's got a damn good soundtrack.
Well, on that note, enjoy the rest of the show. I will have to listen back because I want to hear John talk about this ridiculous Battlestar game. But I'm going to go hopefully put my kid back to bed. Yeah. So I'll talk to you guys later.
So now you're stuck here with me.
Oh, no. I'm so alone.
Now you know how Matt feels all the time.
God, to live in the fear that Matt must live in. So you went on a buying spree, I saw.
I went on a bit too much of a buying spree, if one would be so bold. Well, so it's my birthday in December. I have my birthday like 5 days before Christmas, so I kind of just get a fusion of the two. And since I am an adult, when people ask, when my family asks, what do you want for Christmas? I just say, money. Just give me money.
Yeah.
Except for this year, I asked for a toaster and did get a toaster, and I'm very excited. And that's how I know Congrats. That I've become a boring adult. But usually it's money. And so there were all those winter sales, like on Steam and on Switch. And I bought just a bunch of stuff. I've played through a good amount of it. Like I played through I Am Dead on Neil's recommendation. Neat little sort of puzzle game. I played Embracelet on your recommendation.
Yes.
I enjoyed it quite a bit. It good. Was very good. And I played Disc Room because Disc Room is cool. I've been playing Dicey Dungeons. But the one that I've been playing the most recently and that I have like this weird complicated relationship with at this point is Paradise Killer. So Paradise Killer,
yeah.
I first heard about in multiple podcasts I listened to and from a couple of people in the NWR Slack of like being a game of the year contender. Like people enjoyed
was
it that
this
much.
Who reviewed? Was it Jordan that reviewed this?
I want to say it was Jordan. I know Willems played
it
too.
Yeah, I think it was Jordan.
But so Paradise Killer, for anybody that does not know, is a mystery game where you play as the character Lady Love Dies. That is her name. Everybody in this game has a weird name. There's Dr. Doom Jazz and Crimson Acid and Akiko 14. And it's just, it's bizarre. And basically it takes place in this weird alternate reality where like cosmic gods showed up or something. And so this group called the Syndicate is trying to like make islands to be perfect societies or something. Man, I'm gonna be real, I don't know. But the council that leads the syndicate is murdered, and they bring in Lady Love Dies, who used to be their investigator but got exiled when something bad happened. And she comes in and has to like solve who murdered this council. And it's so far has this very interesting story of like, well, a lot of the people on the island believe they already got the guy because he's already in jail. He's a guy that was possessed by a demon. He was at the crime scene, et cetera, et cetera. And you go digging around and it's like, oh, everybody has had the opportunity to kill these people and the motive. And I haven't finished it yet. But it's a very, very interesting mystery, and it's got a lot of really unique characters, and I hate the way it plays. Because when I picked this game up, I figured it was just going to be a point-and-click adventure, like Ace Attorney style. That's what it seemed mm-hmm. like from the outside. No, it is a 3D exploration game.
Yes.
And I genuinely think it would have worked way better as a point-and-click adventure.
I will say the weird art and stuff of just looking at Jordan. It was Jordan who reviewed it. I double-checked. Looking at his just the footage in his review, it does look cool. Like I like the art style and stuff of the 3D. But yeah, weird game to have be not a visual novel.
Yeah, and it's. The thing is, it kind of feels like it is only like a thing, an exploration game, because that makes the game longer. Like, if this was a visual novel, I feel like I would have been done with it two nights ago. Bar none. But because I have to, like, slowly walk everywhere and run, and even your run is not that much useful, not much faster. And, like, there's some platforming elements sometimes, which is really weird in first person and with the physics of the game. And it just feels like it's there to pad the game out. And this definitely feels like, I'm pretty sure, if I haven't, like, looked it up, but I'm pretty sure if I had to guess, this is, like, this studio's first commercial release. And it's damn impressive for that.
Sure.
But I do feel like it is the wrong genre for what it is trying to be. Obviously, something keeps bringing me back to it, because I've probably put, like, 8 hours into it. And I do plan to finish it. But I don't know, man. It's just... it drags specifically because of that. And then at some point, for anybody that does play Paradise Killer, I'm going to give you a piece of advice. Use the foot bath immediately, the instant you have the ability to do so.
Well, that's just good advice for life.
Well, yeah, if you see a foot bath, you should use it. But you use it
no matter where you are.
Specifically in Paradise Killer, you can walk up to a foot path and you can spend 5 blood crystals. I think it's 5. Which is the currency of the game. And it gives you the ability to do a thing called meditate, which your character closes her eyes, and when she opens it, there is temporarily an icon next to every pickup in the world.
I could see where that would be useful.
And it's very, very useful. And also, to be perfectly honest, very overwhelming. Because there are a lot, and very few of them are actually something you need to solve the mystery. Most of them are just relics that you pick up, and they give you some world building. And that's really it. And the icons make zero distinction between the two. But yeah, you want that ability immediately, or you'll miss everything.
That's weird that that's an unlockable thing and not just a function of the game.
I feel like it should also be a toggle and not a, they last for like 10 seconds and then they fade out again.
That's a weird, yeah.
It's a bizarre, I don't think, if I were to have played this before 2019, because this is like, or if I were to have played this before the end of 2020, because this is mostly me playing it to, like, try and clear out some of my 2020 backlog before the 2021 backlog becomes a thing, inevitably. I don't think I would have put this even in my top 10. I think it's good, but it's not as good as some of the other stuff I played in 2020.
Yeah. It looks like Jordan gave it a 7.
That's about what I would give it, honestly.
Sounds about right, yeah.
It's good, and if you like good mystery games, like, I definitely recommend it. It has also got a really, really good soundtrack. I don't know. I think it might have been slightly ruined by me hearing people say, like, oh no, this is a game of the year contender, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe something in the ending will blow me away. I don't know, but at this point, I agree.
If nothing else, it sounds like there is an audience for it. So if you're listening to this and you think it sounds awesome, maybe you're one of those people who thinks it's a game of the year thing.
Yeah.
And you should play it.
It is a neat game overall. Just probably not one I would have given a high spot on my top 10 list of the year.
Yeah.
So let me be straight with you. I have never seen any episode of Battlestar Galactica in my life, so let's do this.
That is fine, because the PR for this game never saw us either. So, like you, I wound up with a little eShop credit after the holidays and was perusing. And I, on the site, have a reputation for, if there is a game with spaceships, I usually review it. That's my jam. So I'm looking through for games, and of course I did look through the sales, and I was actually debating what I was thinking I was going to get was Sword Art Online Fatal Bullet. That looked like my kind of thing. But then I randomly happened to stumble across Battlestar Galactica Dreadlock. Dreadlock Deadlock. Different game.
That's the sequel.
Right. And I, unlike Joe, have seen every episode of Battlestar Galactica, both the original 80s show and the more modern 2003-2004 series. And I'm a big fan of it. And I honestly thought I had played every Battlestar Galactica game, which was about two of them. So the existence of this game was a surprise to me, which is honestly weird on the eShop. And I assume you have a similar thing where because we get sent PR about games and game developers actively want us to know their game exists so that we will talk about their game, I usually am at least sort of subconsciously aware of every game I scroll past on there, assuming it's not some like crazy small game.
Sort of, but I like there's so much crap that floods.
I usually just like as I'm scrolling, I'm like I generally like I recognize titles. Like I know that these games mm-hmm. exist. And so for a game with a significant brand behind it, in addition to being a brand that I actively like, to just be on there and be like, wait, what? And then this game came out in like, so it came out on PC in 2017 and came out on Switch in I think 2019, apparently. I checked my email and we never received any PR about it.
Oh, no.
It did not appear in our email at all. I then checked Metacritic. And based on the Switch or any console reviews of it outside of PC, I don't think any PR ever happened around it. I think this is a secret game.
Huh.
And I think I am the first person to ever discover that it's on
you
Switch.
You might have stumbled into an ARG or something.
Yeah, this is some weird thing. But Battlestar Galactica Dreadlock. I said it again. So apparently... once John is a Heineken and a half deep in the evening, he cannot say deadlock. He will only say dreadlock. Battlestar Galactica Deadlock is a tactical RPG with spaceships, and it's really, really good. So the combat itself is you'll have a bunch of ships, and rather than something like Fire Emblem where you'd have like a grid, each ship just has a certain kind of range it can move in a given amount of time, and you can only move within a certain arc. So like the momentum of your previous move carries over into the next one, so you're always going to be starting in the direction you were moving previously. You can't just move forward and then in the next turn immediately move back. You'd have to turn around. And then you're moving both, you know, across a plane, but also up and down because space. And then all of your weapons on your ships, different ships have different weapon arcs and can shoot, you know, some ships shoot off to the side, some ships shoot front and back. Some ships can deploy fighter squadrons, which you can then also command. If your ships run into each other, they will blow up, which I found out on accident. So it's a very complex tactical RPG / space combat sim. And it's very cool.
It sounds and super I'm very neat, honestly.
Yeah, I'm very upset. I didn't know it existed. And then outside of combat, you have a map which has, you know, these multiple star systems, each with a bunch of different planets, where the campaign will play out, and you'll have the story missions pop up on there. And you'll also have the enemy fleets will also just randomly appear on planets that you'll need to go deal with. And so it's not just a straightforward go from mission to mission. You have to manage resources that you're getting from completing missions and use that to fuel your jump drives to go to other systems to do those missions. You are also responsible for building and maintaining your fleet. So as you go through the game, you'll unlock new ships. If a ship is destroyed, it is gone. And so you have to use resources to build new ships for your fleet. You can build multiple fleets and then kind of go off and do side quests with one fleet while you're doing your main quest line with another. And it's remarkably complicated, and the menus are baffling at first. Like, they are dense. But once you get the hang of it, it is a very deep and super compelling strategy RPG, which is bizarre because every other Battlestar Galactica game that's come out has been some sort of shooter, like a space sim, like a first-person spaceship piloting shooter. Battlestar Galactica Online had a little bit more of the strategy, but it was still a shooter. And there is an awful Xbox 360 arcade game that was a bad top-down shooter. But they're all like that. So it's a huge departure from any other game associated with this franchise. But I think it might be the best. And it's just super weird to me that they didn't tell anyone that it exists.
Well, yeah.
Because had this game, like, had we got PR for this game, A, I would have immediately volunteered to review it. And I think I would have reviewed it very positively. So I may still wind up writing a review for it just for the heck of it. But it's just so weird to me.
Well, yeah. That, the more you describe it, the more it sounds like some actual money was, like, dumped into this game.
Oh, yeah. It's very – it looks nice. Well, and it's – you know, the Switch version looks nice. The PC version looks better, obviously, but the Switch version looks nice. And one of the cool things you can do because, like I said, like all of your movement takes into account your movement from the previous turn. And there's stuff like when you launch a missile – it's not like in a tactical JRPG where when you launch a range attack, it then does that animation. You see that range attack hit. You launch a missile, and those missiles will launch and go for the amount of time that that turn is, but your turn may end before those missiles hit their target. So you can do things where, like, if somebody fires a missile from way far out, it may pause before that missile gets to you, and then you can make adjustments to your ship's defenses before that missile hits. And then at the end of the battle, there's a replay function that plays through the entire battle with, like, cinematic cameras without the breaks for turns. And so you just see everything playing out perfectly smoothly, and it's a really cool take on the genre. And yeah, it's great. And if you don't know anything about Battlestar Galactica, that's fine, because the story isn't super interesting. just know that there's space humans and space robots, and you need to defeat those space robots because they're a problem. And that's it.
Yeah, it's kind of baffling that nobody ever heard about that game existing. Interesting.
Yeah, so that's your secret game of the day. But with that, I think we have come to the end of this episode of Connectivity. Joe, thank you very much for being here, because if you weren't, then Neil would have left and I would have had to sit by myself describing that game. and that would have been awkward.
Man, can I rescind my guest spot? I want to hear that now.
You could just delete your audio and it would essentially be the
same. There's a whole section of me talking about Paradise Killer, but it's on the your side.
It's just like a long silence, and then I go, oh, yeah, okay. let's see. Why don't you should plug your stuff, because you've got – I know of at least two podcasts that you're on, and you could have more that I don't know about.
It's only two. It used to be like five a long time ago, and I don't talk about those because they sucked.
The dark days
of 2015. I am on Twitter at The Debaga. That's THEDOBAGA. Yes, it's a weird name. Yes, it was made when I was a child. No, I will never change it.
Same.
And I do two podcasts, one with Matt, who was actually on this show a couple weeks ago. He mentioned it as well, called Smashterpieces, where we are playing one game for every character in Super Smash Brothers. And then we do a discussion podcast about that game. We stream our playthroughs on twitch.tv/NintendoWorldReport. You can find those streams every Thursday, and then another day that the other person decides to play as well. We're going to start Pokemon Puzzle League in like a week or so, and that's going to be a disaster, so you're going to want to see that. And we're about to release an episode on Banjo-Tooie, which we found was not as good as we remembered it being.
You both actually beat Banjo-Tooie,
yes,
right?
Yes, we beat all of them.
That's what
Pokemon
I thought.
Puzzle League is the only one where we have like an actual abort mission button. because we are both positive that we are not. We're playing it for Mewtwo. And the reason is because Mewtwo is apparently the boss on Very Hard. And we have both come to the conclusion of, Mewtwo's not even going to show up on our damn stream. We'll try, but he's not going to.
You should have played like Pokken Tournament or something.
We should have played a lot of games, John. And
choices were made.
And literally whenever we bring up Puzzle League now, it was Matt's idea originally. And Matt goes, I think we made a mistake putting this game on the list. So it'll be an experience that we have. I do another show that is not associated with NWR with my friend Peter Spasia. We do a show called Original Sound Chat, where each week we both bring a game and talk about like sort of the development story behind it. But then we do a deep dive into like the composer and where they came from. And then we pick five critical tracks from the soundtrack and we do a deep dive into those. And it's very interesting. Some of the stuff we find, such as like the guy who arranged the main theme of Resident Evil 7 is the same guy who wrote the Kit Kat Give Me a Break jingle. Oh. That was not something I was prepared to learn, but I did in October.
No.
Or
that's knowledge that no one should have.
Or the single greatest and most intimidating fact either of us have ever found on the show, which is the composer behind Cuphead, that was the first soundtrack he ever wrote for anything. That was the first music he ever wrote.
That's almost infuriating.
Yeah, like, when I learned it,
because that soundtrack is really damn
good.
When
I learned that, I was like, what am I supposed to do with that information? How am I supposed to process this?
Right. I think that's the point at which you stop doing anything with your
life.
I think that's just
it. It's nuts. That's his first ever thing.
Yeah.
We just recently hit 100 episodes a couple weeks ago. We have not missed we are coming up on 2 years. We have not missed a single week. Comes out every Tuesday. Sometimes gets pushed to Wednesday, very rarely, but most of the time it comes out on Tuesdays. And yeah, it's just a really cool show. And if you like video game music, you should listen to Original Sound Chat.
Yeah, if you're a fan of like radio trivia, and need that niche filled, since those episodes are a bit sparse, this is a podcast you would probably enjoy.
Yeah, if I must say so myself, I think both of the shows are very good.
They are good. I don't like that Matt character.
I mean, I've been trying to get him fired for years, but it turns out he has like a half stake in the show, so.
Mistakes were made. Well, thank you all very much for listening. We will, of course, be back next week, assuming that the United States are still here next week. You never know. But until then, if you have any hot thoughts, hot takes, hot whatevers, you can send them in to connectivity@NintendoWorldReport.com. You can also follow us on Twitter I should double check before I say this. I think it's at ConnectivityNWR, but it might also be at NWR Connectivity. Okay, it's Connectivity at ConnectivityNWR. Normally Neil does the outro tags. So I realized as I started, I was like, oh no, this is the stuff that Neil
says.
See,
that's where I am. Peter usually does the ending tags for original sound chat, so I'm not used to having to do it.
Yeah, so oh no. But yes, follow @connectivity NWR on Twitter. And if you enjoy this podcast, maybe rate it on your podcast provider of choice. Once again, Joe, thank you very much for joining
me. Thank you for having me. It was fun.
And Neil, wherever you are, you are in our
thoughts. We'll be missed. It's too bad he died.